Mully and Hall, up early to start your day with Chicago sports talk.
I got to tell you, I'm absolutely loving it right now.
Oh, my God. My God.
Time to catch you up on this morning's show so far.
This is for you. Let's go.
I think the individual most responsible for the Hawks winning last night, you could say Corey Crawford, because of everything he did to keep them in that game. I know it is premature, but I'm here for the hype, Molly. I have a hard time seeing this team losing two in a row. I just think they won't let it happen. It only happened about 6 hours ago, so I might be still on a hockey high. But I have a hard time seeing this team lose two games in a row to an Oilers team that's pretty bad defensively. And then the Hawks have their flaws, but the Hawks have the experience that I think you saw play a major role last night. That was what they call in sports a character win.
Mike Mulligan.
He's fearless, he's observant, and has great emotional intelligence.
David Hall.
He's a winner. He's intelligent. He's innovative. He has strong character.
We have Craig Kimbrell available for your questions.
Has your confidence taken a hit?
No. I mean, I'm still going out there trying to compete. I'm not going out there saying that I think I can get beat today. I don't want to be out here, but by no means am I anywhere close to that.
No, I do not think he's confident. No, he did not look like he was ready to find that comfortable spot and get out there. The very fact that you're saying that you're competing against yourself and not the guy in the box tells me you got some issues going on there and it's all clouded in your head. I would say the guy is kind of mentally lost right now. He is really battling with himself. He is dealing with adversity. They're trying to help him through it. I feel bad for him because when you've been that good and you're that bad, you got to be aware of it, right? So I think he's having a lot of battle in his own head right now.
Mully and Hall on 670 The Score.
Let's freaking go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Oh, it's been a lot of fun this morning. So much good stuff to talk about. Obviously, the Blackhawks with the come-from-behind victory with a couple late goals, including one with a minute and 16 seconds left that is credited to the captain. And Jonathan Toews gets you a victory. A wonderful finish for the Blackhawks in that game. They actually played with the lead. We hadn't seen that happen, but it didn't last very long, and they ended up having to come from behind, and they did so. And as you say, it was a great sign for a team to be able to do that. We know tonight Tyler Chatwood is on the bump for the Chicago Cubs. The last time out, he had 11 strikeouts over 6 2/3 innings. And we're going to turn him into a closer. Not on board with that idea. Not on board.
We'll get to that in a moment. But I think, looking at the Blackhawks, two goals in the final 5:48, Mully. And they came, the play started with two defensemen, with the one that Highmore was deflected, started with Slater Cuckoo. And the other one with Jonathan Toews, the game winner, with 76 seconds left, was Connor Murphy. Two guys, when we talk about, or we just talk about the Hawks and what they lacked is the secondary scorers, and they were big factors. And yesterday, we wondered about how the Hawks would respond, and they fell behind 3-2, and they had two redirections for the winning goals and the key goals, and now they're changed the course of their postseason. So that is going to be fun tomorrow night. But yes, tonight we see the Cubs and the idea of Tyler Chatwood as a closer that Gordon proposed. I could almost hear you kind of roll your eyes a little bit when he suggested that, because you don't like the idea, I could tell.
Well, we'll get into that in a second. I got to go back to you using cuckoo. If you will, for a moment, that you are a high school substitute teacher, and you go into a classroom and you have a sheet of names and you take attendance and you call out Keok Coke and Slater Cuckoo explains to you that it's Cuckoo. Do you immediately give him a jug? Do you send him directly to detention because he's having a go at you? Or do you just call the guy cuckoo the rest of the class? Which is it?
I that's a really good – I've never thought of that in those terms. I just thought that a guy named Slater Cuckoo would probably be very good at fighting in hockey because he probably has had to defend himself from people trying to mock him as he grew up. And he's got a great personality. I don't know if you pay attention much to the Chicago Blackhawks website, but they have gone behind the scenes in the bubble, and Slater Cuckoo has been one of those guys that you could tell is good in the room, as they say, and he was good on the ice last night, and he's been very good in this series for the Hawks. They're going to need him again Friday night when they clinch.
Yeah, that's there's no question about that. And probably the reason I asked the question is because I once had a substitute teacher, and we all changed the pronunciation of our names, and I ended up getting a jug, which I believe means judgment under God. I was in the seminary. I kept insisting that we were Spanish, and it was pronounced Moyegan because of the two L's, it being a Y sound, and didn't work. Got in trouble for that one, but I would.
I don't think that
would
work. I was wondering how you were going to mispronounce your name.
It was a desperate attempt. I mean, clearly. I mean, I'm not Spanish. I couldn't pull it off.
No, but you could not.
I know. I know.
As someone who grew up having his name mispronounced at every turn, you just sort of learn to live with it, and you just kind of like, yeah, okay, Hoff. Yeah, I'm here. It's Haw, H-A-W, like hee-haw, okay?
Oh, boy. See, I'd give you a jug if you said like hee-haw. You'd be out.
What is this jug that I hear of?
It's a detention. You never heard of a jug? Come on.
No.
Who didn't get a jug?
You know? Okay.
I, unfortunately, I was a very, as you can imagine, an obnoxious kind of personality when I was a young man.
What?
Yeah, and I remember we had left school to get tickets to a concert, and we were so delighted by this that we came in and turned ourselves in and took the punishment, right? Well, I had like three cards stapled together with all of my offenses. A couple of these guys, there were four of us, had never had a detention before in their lives, and I was leading the league. Now, a lot of that, David, was because my older brother, Patrick, was late for school every day his senior year. I was a sophomore, and the woman that was running the school or running the detention stuff, she thought that I was kind of taller, and she thought I was the older brother, so she assumed that it was me. So I kept getting chalked up for late, and I kept getting, you know, I mean, I'd literally have my name called out. We'd be at, like, some service, and I'd have to show up, and the disciplinarian, who was a frightening character, would tell me that I was coming in on a Saturday, and I just like nod and do it. And this had gone on all year before they figured out that I was the younger brother.
Now, young Michael, is it really the Christian thing to do to blame your brother for
your
transgressions?
Oh my God, it is one of the many things I owe him. I'm going to get that guy before it's all said and done. Because he was coming in late every day, and he was like, oh, they don't care. So he'd come in later, and then I'd go in earlier.
At least you're over it. Clearly.
No, I'm never going to be over. I'm going to need years of help.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for bringing that up. I'm delighted by the Blackhawks because, again, we don't know who they'll play in the next round, right? Because it's one of these deals where they're going to do the seeding thing. I was hoping that you could look at it like a tournament and, you know, they could suddenly be the number 5 seed instead of the 12 seed. They're going to be the 12 seed throughout this thing. So you would imagine it's going to get progressively more difficult. It's just when they announced this and when they were brought into this, didn't you feel like that was a good matchup? It's really funny. You just felt like they had one advantage really over that team, which was in goalkeeping, but it was a good matchup because it wasn't a team that was going to slug it out. It wasn't a team that was going to dirty it up. It was a team that wanted to play fast, and that's really what the Blackhawks do best.
They do that well. And I don't want to be like overstating this because I do tend to get a little bit, you know, fanish when it comes to the Hawks. I think you try to take a step back. But I don't know that it matters who they play in the next round because I do believe that, yeah, there's some teams that are going to be better matchups than others. But I think what we have seen at times in spurts in hockey, and especially with this team with its pedigree, the Hawks, if they are on, they can compete against anybody, and they can hold their own, and I don't think they're going to be overmatched at any step of the way. That's what makes the NHL postseason, I think, unique. There is a randomness involved. There is obviously depth with other teams that they will have a problem with, but I think the Hawks have reminded us in games like last night, they're capable of doing whatever is necessary to win and rising to the occasion regardless of the opponent.
And we do indeed have the Blackhawks winning this series now. I think we had decided that it was over after game one, and then game two gave us a slight pause, but then now they did clinch it last night. It's just a question of whether it's going to be in game four or game five.
I just have a hard time seeing them lose twice. Yeah, to a team that defensively is not going to lock them down. And I just don't know that that's realistic. So, yeah, I think last night was the must win of the series, and the winner of game three was going to be the winner of the series. So,
yeah, I mean, I hope you're right. I'm not done kind of sitting there and saying this is it, and it's going to be over. I just think that, you know, I'm trying to live life a day at a time, if you will, David. You know, I know it's a sports adage, but I'm trying to take it a shift at a time. Let's put it that way. Well,
that's what they taught you in the seminary. I think that's pretty wise.
That's not what they taught me.
Okay.
They taught me faith. I just wish it had really clicked in a little harder.
We skate by faith and not by sight.
They never said that. Okay. I love that idea, though. I do. I love when you go there. All right, we're gonna bring in a Brett Sopel next. We're gonna talk some hockey. We're gonna talk with Brett about what he saw last night, and is it over? Is it actually over, or is it not over until the captain scores in the final minute? It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to score.
I mean, I think you want to keep the pressure on. We didn't want to have to be defending. They had a little bit of a push once we tied it. They had one really good shift immediately after where they kind of hemmed us in, but I thought we were patient. We didn't give up much, and then we got a chance to go the other way, and, you know, obviously outstanding deflection there by Taser. You know, I think it's, you know, playoffs, you can't get too high or too low in the moment. Just stick with it, and I thought we did a good job of doing that. You know, we tied it up, and we just kept playing, and so I think that's part of why we got rewarded.
Seven to the score. That's the voice of Jeremy Colliton, and the Blackhawks take a 2-1 series lead with the big win last night. We're delighted to welcome in Brett Sopel. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Good morning, Brett. How are you?
Morning, I'm Brett. Good. How are you?
Well, we're fired up now. I mean, my goodness, you look at that game and you think about it, and you know, I at one point, well, I think they had 5 deflections off the iron, and they had 6 power plays, and they got 1 goal out of it. I think when you got to the third period and they're trailing, you're thinking, oh, no, this is a really bad sign. And they end up scoring a couple goals late in that game, and now you put Edmonton on the brink. The Blackhawks look like the better team, period, end of story.
Yeah, no, you know, it's you know, experience. It's being in there, you know, in the situation in the moment before and understanding what that is. And this is, you know, a completely different scenario with everything that's gone on in the last few months. But, you know, that's where the veteran players come in. You take a look at any trade deadline. You look for teams that trade for veteran guys. And, you know, obviously the Hawks have that. But, you know, I've been impressed by the amount of points that the defense have put up, you know, 11 points in 3 games, a lot of offense that they usually don't get from the back end.
Brent, this Hawks power play is really struggling right now. 1-for-6 last night, only 7 shots on goal. And it's easy from the outside to look at and think, okay, they're getting too cute. They're waiting for this, you know, cute pass or the perfect shot, and it's just not going to be there. Why don't they just put somebody in front of the net and shoot the puck? I don't think it's as simple as that. You have to give the Oilers credit because their penalty kill was the second best in the league this year. When you watch it from your expert perspective, what are you seeing the Hawks not do effectively in the power play?
Yeah, no, you're right. You know, you got to give Edmonton, credit. You got Draisaitl and obviously the MVP, Connor McDavid, with that speed closing them off. But yeah, it's when you are struggling, you want to keep it simple. You know, try and get it to the point and get it to the wall and get some shots. But they do get a great job getting in lanes, and you don't have to score. You know, that 1-for-6 is is oversighted. Get some momentum, get a few opportunities. So you don't have to go out there and score. You don't have to go for 4-for-6 or 5-for-6. Just get some momentum out of there. Take that man advantage. But the biggest thing is that you got to outwork their penalty kill. And, most of the time they've done a decent job of that, but they can obviously get better here in game 4.
You know, when you look at this matchup, it seems like this is the right team for them to be playing. Like, they match up with them, and we were having a discussion about whether they would match up with everyone. How much better has this team gotten really since the break, since the start of the season? The first couple months of the season were bad, even before the injuries hit.
Well, what you have to do is kind of clear the slate. Obviously with COVID and everybody being shut down for 2 months, no player does that. We were always active in the gym or on the ice or things. So this has reset everybody, reset the team. Obviously, some of the injuries, important key injuries coming back. Corey Crawford, has been very good. Beginning of the year, Robin Leonard was here. Who's going to be number one? Who's going to be here? So there's a lot of questions all year long that are answered right now. And guys are just going out there and playing. And, for a team game, for the most purpose, for these first three games, very impressed.
You won a cup in 2010, one of the deepest Hawks teams, I think, ever. And that team had such good secondary scoring that made a huge impact in the playoffs. And this one last night, whether it was Connor Murphy, Slater Koekkoek, we've talked about, they're getting guys step up at key times. What are you seeing in terms of who are some other guys that you have seen have maybe unsung good series and haven't gotten a lot of attention, but have been guys that have proven they can be counted on?
Well, you don't win the Stanley Cup with your first and second line and your top, your top 3-4 D-men. That doesn't work. Everybody's got a top 2 line. Everybody's got your top 4 D-men, so it doesn't work that way. You win with your 3rd and 4th line, your 5th, 6th D-men. Oh, you take a look at that tie and go, Highmore, that's his first as a 4th line guy, that's his first playoff game or a playoff goal. That's huge. Coming down with like 5.5 minutes left in the 3rd period, so that's who wins you games. That's who wins you series. That's who wins you Stanley Cups. Guys like that playing in their 3rd and 4th line. That go out there and play hard. And yeah, and Slater Koekkoek, those guys are getting more ice time contributing. But take a look to your 3rd and 4th line, the guys that aren't flashy, guys kind of like myself that played that role, that quietly go out there and sacrifice and do the little things right.
Brent, we know you've recently released a documentary, Brent Sobel, Here to Change the World, and it details your struggle with dyslexia and dealing with the challenges and the stigma of that affliction. I know it was very emotional for you, but you really wanted to send a message to other people that have been through this and to help any kids that are suffering from it.
Yeah, dyslexia is 1 in 5 and it's hereditary. Nobody knows how relative it is and how prevalent it is. You think about kids in the classroom, there's 20, 25, 30 kids, 4 or 5 of those kids are struggling. So, I told my story to highlight my struggles, and this goes on every day. This is the real world. So I wanted every kid, every adult, girl, boy, doesn't matter who it is, to know that, I'm out there to help them. They're not alone during this battle, and just trying to bring dyslexia to the forefront. So parents know what it is. Teachers know what it is, especially going back to school here. Just the thought of going back to school with dyslexia is mental health, knowing that the anxiety and everything that's going with it.
It's a great message, Brent, and congratulations on all that you've done to kind of help spread it. And when you watch these games, and I know that your time in Chicago meant a lot to you, and this the Blackhawk experience, you know, it seems like it has been, was that long ago, but 2010, you know, the first of three cups here in Chicago, and the core has remained the same, and those four guys are still on the ice. And when you watch a guy like Jonathan Toews score his 11th game-winning goal in the playoffs to put him in company kept by only Stan Mikita, Bobby Hull, and Patrick Kane, how much do you marvel and how do you explain it? His longevity, his ability to come through in the clutch, it is as consistent of a thing in Chicago sports as there's been in many years.
Well, you know, Toews is going to go down and obviously first ballot Hall of Famer. You know, there's certain guys that pedigree to be leaders and certain guys that don't. You know, guys that make it or break it are guys that have the mental capacity. You know, I always say hockey's 90% mental, 10% physical. I can name you a ton of guys that have, you know, way more skill than Toews, way more skill than a lot of guys ever played in the NHL. But mentally, they didn't have it. You know, Toews gets excited. He gets ready for big games. He was just a born leader. And, you know, Mark Messier, one of the best leaders ever, you know, I played with him. And actually, he was on the ice for my first ever NHL goal. You know, you knew from day one that's what he had. That's why they got drafted. That's why he got the captaincy at such an age. And there he is still leading the way after everything that he's accomplished.
How does that come into play in this sort of a situation, right? I mean, here you are, if you're the Blackhawks, you're up 2-1. Surely you're going to see the best that Edmonton has to offer here in Game 4. It's been amazing to see the Hawks win Game 1, the counterpunch, the Hawks come back, and now Edmonton on the brink. It would seem like for a young team, it would be awful difficult to maintain what you have to maintain to knock a team out, but because you have guys that have been through it, maybe it makes it a lot easier.
Well, it makes it so much easier. I talked about, you know, earlier here, that's that veteran leadership that, you know, you're coming down in normal, you know, seasons, coming to the trade deadline. That's why teams look for veteran guys. You know, veteran guys have played in the playoffs and understand what it takes. And, you know, Jeremy Carlson had talked about not getting too high and not getting too low. You know, that's 100% the truth. No matter if you're down or up, you've got to stay, you know, stay even keel. And, you know, a veteran team can do that. You go back to 2009, you know, when we lost to Detroit in the conference final, you know, we had a lot of roller coasters, highs and lows, because we hadn't been there. So learn a lot from that and to allow us to go in 2010 and win it. That's just that veteran leadership and understanding, you know, where you are at the moment and how to react.
On the other end of the spectrum, Brent, the Oilers, who don't have that experience, they had lost just once. They were 29-1-2 when leading after two periods, and then last night happened. And you wonder about their response, and you wonder how they will recover. What do you expect in Game 4?
Well, no stats or numbers mean anything to me. You know, before we, you know, if we had a normal season, the fact that we had to take 2 months off without skating and then get back into it and another training camp, all the numbers to me are thrown out. Well, you got two of the best players, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. So, you know, they're going to lead the way. If they don't lead the way, Edmonton Oilers don't have a chance. So those two are going to get a push and the rest of the team are going to follow. And, you know, as a Hawks, just to stay calm. Know where they are on the ice and don't try and match up against them and run around. Just play the way you've played and be smart with that puck. And what that means is putting it in good places, taking shots when you need to take shots, getting it out when you need to go. Puck placement against that team is key. You take a look of Connor McDavid's hat trick 2 games ago.
Right.
There wasn't puck placement. And what happens? He's got the speed, turns around, and back in that. So, puck management, puck placement is going to be key.
When we talk about Corey Crawford, you know, we don't often sit back and marvel. You know, this guy didn't really have any kind of tune-up, didn't have any kind of ramp-up, didn't have any time to suddenly be thrown into this thing. And I think last night in particular, boy, he was special. I mean, there were some point-blank stops, and you look at what happened in that game, I don't know that you could. I don't know if can you stand on your head and allow three goals. I don't know what the terminology means, but man, he looked awful good.
Well, you know, let's go back to the game two. The six goals for the first four goals, he had no chance on. So Corey Crawford and myself are a lot alike, meaning we're not pretty. On the ice, Corey Crawford doesn't get a lot of credits. Because he's not a pretty goalie. He stops the puck. Sometimes it's with his head, sometimes with his backside. Kind of like myself, I'm not skating up and down the ice, but we did the job. And Corey Crawford is one of the best goaltenders in the league by far. And the Blackhawks would be nowhere near where they are, what they've done, without Corey Crawford. So you're right. He doesn't get the accolades, but He is good, and he's counting when he needs to be.
Great stuff, Brett. Thanks a ton. Really good catching up with you.
Thanks, Brett.
I appreciate it.
Good talking.
That's Brett Sopel. Yeah, good to talk some hockey. And my goodness gracious, you think about some of these guys and how long they've been at it. And, we haven't talked about Duncan Keith. He's 37 years old.
I know.
It's incredible.
And he's still out there for 22 minutes or so on the
yes.
ice. The guy never tires. I just love talking to Sopel. That guy is the consummate competitor, and he sounds like a hockey player, doesn't he?
Yeah, I don't know how you go through a 17-year career unless you still are, right, at some point.
Right.
It's just extraordinary. A lot of fun. Great stuff with the Blackhawks. It's really been a lift, I think, for everyone. And here's hoping that continues. 312-644-6767. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
That's a really close play. And if we want to nitpick, that ball looked like it was barely fair from our vantage point. I wasn't hobby, so where I can see it, if I want to be the type of manager that nitpicks every little thing, these guys go out and play their butt off every single night for me and for this group. And I'm not gonna, if I feel like they're dogging it, we'll have a conversation, but I feel like that's a play that he may assume was foul. I think Javi's one of the most exciting players, and he plays hard every time I see him out there on the field. So I don't have a problem with a guy that brings it every single day. And I pencil in the lineup that, you think a ball is foul, I've got to save his legs. He's going to be in there every night.
El Mago, the magic man.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. That's David Ross, and he's talking about a play with Javi Baez, and he was asked about it, and he did what managers do, which is publicly defend the player. And I think a lot of people do that sort of thing. But I'm with Gordon. I think privately that did not go unnoticed, and that did not go without comment. And I think that's part of his job, is to make sure that you address things like that. And somebody had a conversation with someone about that one.
Well, we're a day removed from the comment and discussing what it meant when Theo Epstein said that David Ross has addressed some things that have lingered for years. Do you think that's been one of them? Do you think that Joe Maddon would have handled this situation in a similar way? And I ask only because everybody, when you see things like this, they're going to go back and wonder, this same people, kind of the same idea. This has happened before with Javi Baez. You wonder if it's going to be handled differently with the new manager.
I would hope so, David. I mean, honestly, I would hope that Joe Maddon would have addressed that too, because again, that is your job. That's what you have to do. You can't, the way things like that creep into the game, creep into your team, is if they go unchallenged. So you have to be able to be comfortable enough to go up to a guy and say, hey, what the heck is that? You've got to get your act together, etc. I think it's just part of the responsibility of the person in charge. There has to be someone that's capable of walking up to anybody on the team, regardless of how good they are, and challenge them if they make a mistake or make an error, or be it a sin of omission. You've got to be able to talk about it.
But we have always seen, and Mully been around a lot of sports differently, and coaches and managers, they use their platform publicly to send a message and to hold people accountable. And part of the accountability is sort of the public shaming of what you didn't do, and you didn't run it out, or you jumped off sides, or you traveled, or you didn't hustle down to the court. Whatever the sport, whatever the situation, we have seen coaches and managers publicly castigate players for things that they didn't do. David Ross didn't do that last night. He sounded very forgiving of Javi Baez, a guy who has earned the benefit of the doubt in his mind. I was okay with that because I think he's, number one, able to read the room, and number two, he knows Javi Baez is going to save him more than he's going to disappoint him. But you know, we have seen it handled differently by different guys.
Yeah, but I think that you're on a 6-game winning streak. You know, things are going great. You're 10-2. You got to feel great about it. You won the game. It didn't cost you anything. I don't understand why you would publicly chastise him. I think, you know, more now than ever, most managers, most coaches seem to be players coaches, players managers. And that doesn't mean they don't go after guys. It just means they don't do it publicly. And the use of public shame is often limited to guys that are more extemporaneous players, right? Guys more kind of on the outside rather than essential figures.
Or young guys. And before we get off this topic, I want to ask you this. If Luis Robert was a guy who did the same thing, would Ricky Renteria be expected to handle that the same way with a guy who is going to be great and already is, but is a young player that needs to develop work habits? Because what you expect out of him and need to sort of shape or mold is different than a guy in Javi Baez who already has proven himself.
Well, first of all, Luis Robert has been defined as a 6-tool player on this program, okay. I believe. So he's got all the 5 tools, but he's got that baseball sense, the acumen, whatever you want to call it.
He'd never do it. It would never happen.
Oh, never.
It's not even worth considering, David.
Thank you. Bad example. I won't even comment on that because, again, the only real regret I have in my life, and I should have more, is that I didn't name one of my children either Louis or Robert. I don't care if it's boy or girl. I should have done it, and I made an error. I should have seen it coming.
Yes, but aren't you proud of young Aloy?
Wouldn't it be great if you could change names to players you like and just legally do it? The poor kid is, you know, you got to call me Aloy now. Yeah, my dad is insisting to everyone that I be known as Bruno.
But Lucas, time for dinner.
Girl. Yeah, there you go.
Dallas, come in from playing now. We can go on all day. Yeah. All right, well, you know what I mean, though. Younger players who have yet to prove themselves are going to be treated differently and probably have to be treated differently than a guy who's an all-star like Javi Baez.
Yeah, you know, definitely. I think younger players and guys on the way up are more open season, and you want to get that message across. But Javi is far from that. And I think that, you're right, just generally speaking. But I also think that it's, you know, you kind of protect guys publicly, even the young guys, and then you privately want to have a word with them. I just think that's the smartest way to go about it, and I think we see it in all sports.
Exactly right. So before we get out of here, though, I have to revisit this Chatwood idea that you did not like. We haven't really explored fully. It's a creative solution that Gordon Whitmire suggested on NBCSports.com because you have 6 starters and maybe one of them can help your bullpen. And Chatty has the stuff, the swing and miss stuff that you want out of a closer. I don't know that I like disrupting the rhythm he's developed as a starter, though, to put him in another role, which he hasn't done.
Okay, let me ask you this. Why did he end up in the bullpen last year?
Ineffectiveness, could not control, could not locate, command.
He failed as a starter. So they moved him to the bullpen, right? Now, look at the future of this team, right? I mean, you got Yu Darvish under contract. The professor's not going anywhere. I think John Lester has to pitch 74 innings. Is that right? Something like that. 74 point something innings in order to kick in another year. And at last I checked, we're 20% through the season. He has 2 starts and like 11 innings, right? So just project those numbers. out, we don't know if Lester is back or not, and whether he wants to be, whether they want it, we don't know. It is a big unknown. Even Chatwood, you don't know if he's back or not, because if he keeps pitching the way he's pitching, yeah, maybe there'll be a lot of suitors for him. I don't know how free agency is going to work or what's going to happen, but I think you got to look at what you want in your rotation, both now and moving forward. Q's out of contract. Where's he? You know, he doesn't seem like he's part of the future there. I just think that Chatwood has been arguably as good a starter as they've had. You know, between him and the professor, who would you say has been their best starter? It's not as easy a call as you'd say. So the
not
idea of taking a guy that's being that effective out of that role in a short sprint of a season where the league seems to be down starting pitching, I don't know about the wisdom of that. That's all.
You've got to consider the fact, too, that you're in a win-now mode, though, Mully. I think looking ahead, I understand all those realities. But, boy, you've got the best team in the National League right now. And I don't know. Does a six-man rotation make sense? Maybe we can talk about that tomorrow, because they're going to have six healthy starters if Jose Quintana continues on the road back that he will be on today when he pitches that simulated game around noon.
All right. So much to talk about. My God, we had a ton today. We'll have a lot more again tomorrow. I believe it was a fun and productive program, David. We really got it all visited and worked out, and I feel very good about everything we've done today.
Yeah, I feel like we clinched the series today. I think we made some real progress.
You're on a high, buddy. We want to thank everyone for calling, texting, and emailing.
Most of all, thank you for listening.
Means a lot. Thanks very much for that. Don't forget, Ian Happ is on at 9:30 with Dan Bernstein. We want to thank our guy, Dustin Rhodes, for his contribution.
When they gaze upon Yosemite's towering sequoias.
Wow. Yeah, that's something else. Thanks to Kevin Zipak.
Yosemite's.
Have you been to Yosemite? I've been to both Yosemite and to Sequoia National Parks. Our thanks to Ray.
Thanks, Yosemite's.
Ray. Can't get enough.
Have a great day, David. Enjoy your hockey buzz. Mully and Hawes, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
That segment brought to you by Door Systems, now offering touch-free doors. Call 1-800-THE-DOOR.
End the story.
I see you soon, baby.
If it is to be said, so it be. So it is.